Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under,
me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters,
filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
In this episode, we speak with Iveta Klimasheva about the NWHL and her path to becoming a professional hockey player in the United States. We also talk about the NWHL season that was, and we discuss the top three fights at UFC 260. Let's get right into it. Now, you said you want to come back and play another season with the Buffalo Buttes.
Yeah, correct.
Do you know if they're intending on expanding again next year or no?
No, I don't think so, because I didn't hear about anything about that. It will be good if yes, but I don't think right this season, no, because like COVID situation, you know, and all that. So it will be probably harder to open new team.
Will it be the same six? Are the Riveters coming back or is that?
Yeah.
They are coming back.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
They just had to go home because of COVID, but they are still going to be team in NWHL.
Okay, and how different did your team look this season compared to last?
We had better defense, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think we managed to be better in, like, systems and, like, doing the right systems. So that was really better what I saw.
And how many returning players did you have?
Only a few. Now I'm counting in my head. I think 5, 6. Maximum.
So that was it. So you were one of like a handful of people that got invited back.
Yes.
Wow.
So you're amazing then. Right? You don't have to be humble about it. Everyone else are like, no, you can leave. We don't need you anymore. We just need to keep Iveta. That's it. And we're good.
I guess.
Well, for sure, right? You go from a whole team, they let everybody go, and they're like, just you five. You're the only ones we want to keep.
Yeah.
That's a huge accomplishment.
But with that comes a lot of responsibility, because then you have to now work with new players and you have to understand their ebbs and flows, no?
Yeah, but that's why you are doing like preseason camp, you know? That's where you get to know each other on the ice and that's where you practice all that. So, you know, you just have to accept that fact that there is, again, new players and...
So as a veteran on the team, do you get your own locker space?
Yes, we have our locker room, and I was sitting in the same spot as last season, yeah.
Who would you say was the best player on the Buffalo Buttes?
This season?
This season, yes.
I have to say Carly Jackson, goalie.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What about her play stood out to you?
She was like holding us every game. She had like 50 shots on her.
Yeah.
During the game, and she like got all of them, so she was like holding us together,
keeping you in the game, basically.
Yeah.
She was the backbone to the team. Now, in 2019, the Buffalo Buttes were in the finals. What was that like for you?
In 2019?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we were in the playoff, not in final.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It was kind of weird because it was just like one game elimination playoff.
Yes.
So we like lost first game against Connecticut and we were done. So I don't know how that felt. Not good, I guess.
Way to go, Justin. Way to bring up the bad memories, buddy.
My bad. I thought it was a final game and I was like, oh, she was like, well, you know, I ate this that day and I did my workout twice and then
went in there.
And it was...
Yeah, so something that's come up, I've caught wind of it in social media, and it's now made its way into the mainstream media. Currently, right now, March Madness is going on in the States. You know about that, right?
What is that?
That's the NCAA, the women's basketball tournament.
Oh, I saw something, but I'm not really watching basketball at all.
Okay, so outside of the sport itself, the tournament's, of course, taking place in bubbles. Right? They got to have it in a bubble right now. And there's this controversy that's happened where the men's side of the tournament has this massive, fully outfitted gym. And the women's side of the tournament only had a set of dumbbells.
Yeah. I saw that picture. Yeah.
Okay. So I was wondering, like, how are the facilities at the NWHL? What do you have to work out with? Do you have enough?
We as the Buffalo Buttes, we are working out with like personal strength and conditioning coach.
Okay.
And he owns his gym, so we work out there. So that's really good for us, you know. And so, yeah, it's good situation for us because like Buffalo Buttes didn't have to build gym for us or something like that.
That's right.
Yeah. We just have a coach who is have own gyms.
And how did that compare to the facilities you had when you played in Bratislava?
We also had a coach who was preparing us in a gym, so it was kind of the same situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thought I'd ask. I figured you had probably caught wind of the situation at NCAA with the women's having literally nothing to work out with.
Because, like, I don't know if you also saw it too, they were discussing the food issue in the NCAA where the men had this whole feast and girls had Hungry Man dinner.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm serious.
Really?
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah, it was disgusting.
But, like, it was still a problem that women's got less money for sport than men, so that's, I guess, everywhere. We have to, like, fight to get better, even gym equipment or, like, hockey equipment or, like, everything that we have to always fight for that, you know?
That's right.
Which, to men's, they just give them, like, sponsors. Here you go, because you play men's sport.
That's a good thing you brought up that sponsorship, too, because there was another picture showing the amount of product that they get to give away. Men have, like, backpack, hat, shirts, sweaters, pants. I'm pretty sure they have, like, a form of shoe thing as well. And the girls have, like, a hat and a t-shirt. Like, that's it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's sad, considering that the NCAA is supposed to be, like, a non-profit, essentially.
It's supposed to be, yeah.
Well, it's like FIFA, right? FIFA's supposed to be non-profit, has $1 billion in the bank. All right, non-profit my ass. But anyways, that's what kind of, like, it annoys me, because it's like, okay, you have the resources to give it to even these smaller teams, but as opposed to equally dividing it amongst the women's side, you choose to hold on to it for a rainy day? I don't understand.
Correct.
So.
Yeah. And it's this NCW whatever. I don't even know how to say it.
NCAA.
Yeah. It's the same level they are playing, right? Men's and women's. It's not like they are higher and they are lower. It's the same level. So I don't understand why they don't have the same things to get.
Basically, debate comes up all the time with interviews we have and such, and it's going to keep happening until things change. I got a question for you, though. Did the other Slovakian girl return again this year or no?
Right now, she went back home to Slovakia.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know, because she got also only 1 year contract, so, you know, that's always a question for the summer to, like, figure it out.
Yes.
Where to go play. But right now she is at home in Slovakia and she's like waiting for the situation to be cleared and like the season end in NWHL, so we will see.
Correct, yeah.
Well, I'm still hung up on the NCAA thing, to be honest, if I'm being frank with everybody.
I was so pissed when I saw that, like...
Well, that's the thing, because here at Pro Sports Podcasters, we're all about trying to support and give light to women's sports. So when I see things like that, it almost fuels our fire, or at least particularly me, to sit there and try to get the word out even more, right? And I love that this is brought to the forefront. I love that social media is essentially becoming this tool to help push the women market further, farther, and better. And I just can't wait to the point where we sit there and there is no difference except for maybe the time when games start. I would love that. Until that actually happens, it's going to be this complete tear still. And that's what I was just thinking about, because you're like, we had mentioned the other player still back over in Slovakia, and I can only imagine what it's like there to play as a woman, as you had mentioned, because of having a 9-to-5 job and then going back on the ice. So it's like, I almost feel bad. I'm like, I want her to come back and get that credibility and that time and everything that she deserves, because she is a good player. She was two that came over to like try out. She's one of the best. And now she's not there, and it's just, I don't know, I'm in my own thoughts.
No, but like, I'm not saying she will be playing in Slovakia. She just like went home, you know, after season. That's all.
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I just wish he was back.
Yeah, I hope too.
By the way, actually, both Justin and I actually enjoyed the NWHL games.
Oh, yeah. We watched every Toronto 6 game.
Oh, I hate Toronto 6. Don't even say that name.
We're biased, right? We're from Toronto, so we watched them. And we're part of the media crew for the Toronto 6.
The right? Press conference.
The yeah. Press crew, yeah.
Well, okay.
But, yeah, look at her. Oh, enough of that. But
she's like, this interview's done.
Right? The hockey itself was a joy to watch. It was completely entertaining.
Yeah, and last season with the fans, it was like so good. Like, I never experienced anything like that when there is like 1,000 people watching you play hockey, you know?
Can't wait to see that.
And after game, we had like autographs and all that. It was amazing. Like, first time in my life somebody bought my own jersey with my name. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about.
Sorry. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, so that's amazing with like being able to play professional women's hockey league and like somebody is actually supporting you. That's amazing.
Now, do your parents watch the games?
Yeah, but it's hard for them because in Slovakia when we play here at 7, there is like 2 a.m. in the morning, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So they don't sleep much during season.
That's right, they're on Evita time.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be awesome once everything opens back up again, and then you can come play against Toronto in Toronto.
Because we'll be there,
right?
Okay.
And there won't be one person with your jersey. There'll be 3 goofy-looking good guys with your jerseys being like, please sign and take a photo.
But do you think you will be still working for Toronto if you came to game with my jersey?
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
It would be underneath the Toronto jersey.
Oh, okay.
Right, the stadium does get cold.
Exactly. You need to layer up, you know what I mean? That'd be like, yo, psst. Be like, Evetta, come here. Take this pen.
I can't wait to actually see games with fans because we're a brand new podcast, right? We began this year.
Yeah.
We didn't cover the NWHL last year. I didn't even know the NWHL existed last year.
That's great.
Right? So the only women's hockey I ever watched previous really was international hockey.
Yeah.
So now having this, you know, professional league in North America and actually having a franchise attached to the city I live in and getting a chance to watch and experience it, I was blown away. So to see it with fans is going to be amazing. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. I can't wait for that too.
I was going to say with Kobe, he may not have known that the NWHL existed. However, when he found out about it, he became a super fan overnight. Like, he was telling me things in the morning. He's like, did you know that? And I'm like, okay.
I know. A lot of people are like that, that they don't know. And another day, they are like super fans. They are buying jerseys and all that.
Because it's amazing.
I know, yeah.
This is what I'm talking about. You just need, like, you had, so we were watching the games on Twitch, which, are you a Twitcher, by the way?
Not really, no.
Okay, well, anyways. There was at one point, I think there was like 10 or 12,000 people watching for one of the games. And that's impressive. That could fill up a like an arena, like a small-time arena.
Yeah, like Buffalo Sabres arena.
Yeah, legit Buffalo Sabres. 12,000 people watching. 12,000 people watching your game, watching you play, is probably 11,000 more than people watching in Florida. So take that in. You guys have beaten an NHL team. Mic drop. You deserve to have your jersey bought.
Yep, exactly. That's amazing. I mean, and the fact that final games were supposed to be on NBC Sport.
Exactly. Sorry.
Yeah, that's amazing. No, that's awesome too, because you're finally getting some real like high quality media attention.
It's, oh God, I'm so excited for where this like NWHL is going.
And like every season, it's just like better and better with the sponsors and money and all that. It's just getting better. So I think in like 5-10 years, it will be pretty damn good.
For sure. And hopefully you'll still be a part of it.
So ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us in this incredible interview. As you heard, we have this myself and Colbert Durand, along with, oh God, let's see if I can do it, Evetta K. Kimaloshva?
I'm
sorry.
I think you are just pretending you don't know how to say Klimashova.
Klimashova.
Yes.
I need to practice it more.
Yep.
Vadaveta Klimoshova.
Yes.
It was a pleasure having you. You're amazing forward. We're going to test your palate with poutine and other Canadian dishes whenever you come by. And ladies and gentlemen, she plays for the Buffalo Buttes. She is from Slovakia, and she is amazing. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
It was a blast talking to you. Enjoyed it.
Thank you. It was fun. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Hopefully things get back to normal. You can get back home and have some of that crazy dish you're missing.
Yeah, exactly. From my mom.
Before we go, how can our fans and your fans and new fans find you on social media?
I am on Instagram as Iveta Klimashova, I guess. Yeah, my name, Iveta Klimashova.
Okay. Well, we'll have to find you there. We'll post your Instagram when we post this so people can just have easy access to your account.
Yeah, hopefully they will find me.
And enjoy the rest of your day. Get outside. Soak in some of that sun. Have a good one.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye. See you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at pro.sports.podcasters for the most current sports news. Now back to the show.
Talk NWHL, buddy.
Can we not and say we did?
Come on. Let's do it. It's not all bad.
It's not all bad, but being... Okay. All right. Now, before we start this, let me say this. All right. So first off, congratulations to the Boston Pride for winning the Isabel Cup.
Sarcastic clap. Nice.
Another Boston team wins another championship. Oh, how I envy that city and their Boston cream donuts. Moving forward. Kobe, are you aware of the TD Garden curse?
No, I'm not.
Are you aware of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Mr. Durant?
Of course.
Let me tell you a story of woe. There once was a team named the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they tend to do decently well against most teams as of the past few years. However, there's an Achilles heel known as the Bruins. Now, when it comes to any elimination game, the Leafs tend to have to face Boston at the TD Gardens in Boston, where they lose. And it's never by a goal, never by a bad call. It's always by essentially a Francis Ngannou fight.
Yeah, a slaughter.
And did you watch the Toronto Six take on Boston Pride, Kobe?
I watched about 90% of it, and then I cried.
You did better than I did. I cried about 50% of that whole thing. Just, I could see it all happening again. Goals going in that shouldn't have. Defenses making horrible plays. Refs forgetting what a holding penalty looks like. It was...
Yeah, bouncing pucks on a breakaway.
Oh my, Jesus. Anyway, point is, the TD Garden curse happened again against the Toronto Six team. So I'm convinced that on hockey, Toronto is just not allowed to win. And that's it. But hats off to the Boston Pride. They did play a really strong game. You could see it. They had the heart. They had the energy. They had the experience. And I think it was the experience is what really kind of drove this team. With a little bit of luck, too, because there were a few pucks that kind of just didn't go over the line, but definitely made it past the goalie. And with aside from MGM scoring the goal, it was a poop show. It just was, they weren't having anything of what they needed. And it was bad, but it was a good game for the Boston Pride, but it was unfortunate for Toronto. But, you know, it wasn't a complete loss for Toronto because they did win their...
Also, congratulations to the Boston Pride on the Isabel Cup win and to fan of the show, Teresa Vanishova, who we've had on the show earlier this season, not only scoring her first goal, but getting the victory.
So they won. Oh, okay. So that's why I don't remember the name of what it is. It's just called the Season 6 regular season title is what it's called.
Okay, regular season title. Yeah.
Yeah, they won the regular season title. I thought it had a different name. I thought it was something else name. But yeah, so congratulations to Boston. You did well. But we're coming back. I mean, and keep in mind for Toronto Six, too, they are a new team. They did better than most people predicted. It was a tough competition, COVID, plague. And I'm convinced that if they didn't take that break, they would have carried the momentum into the tournament, into the finals, and they would have beaten Boston just like they did game 3 of the season.
When the season began, I remember we got the opportunity to be part of the press crew and to follow the Toronto Six, and neither of us had ever seen an NWHL game. We hadn't even heard about it until then. And we watched the first couple of games, and we're like, this is pretty awesome to watch. Unfortunately, being an expansion team, we're we're not winning any games. And we thought this is going to be a long, painful season for us to watch as, you know, Toronto natives. But they turned it around quickly and finished as the top team in the league. And that's more than you can expect as an expansion franchise.
Honestly.
So it was awesome. Now, would you say, even in our first season, would you say that the Boston Pride is immediately our rival?
Yeah. Any Boston team and Toronto team are rivals, from the Blue Jays to the Leafs to now the Toronto Six. Boston, we love and hate you. Love, Justin.
Something we've learned talking to a number of the NWHL players is that from season to season, the rosters can change dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
So are there any particular players on the Six you hope to see come back next year?
Yes. I want to see MGM come back.
Okay.
She, best goal scorer. Did you see those dangles she did? Kobe, she has hands like she's been doing this for, well, she has been doing it for years. Lockstep, she's amazing. I want her to have the C on. Also, I want to see Digit come back as the head coach. Freaking love her. Taylor Woods, I want to see Taylor Woods back. Although she wasn't there for too long, essentially, she still has that grit grind. She's a forward who I think plays really defensively. Yeah, sorry, and Emma Woods too. I'm not making this up. There wasn't Emma Woods. I'm losing my mind. Yeah, legit. I was like, no, there isn't Emma Woods. She was the assistant captain, right? Yeah, okay. I'm not insane. Yeah, no, I want Emma Woods back too. And I also want Emma Greco. And I also want somebody who's not named Emma anymore and not somebody named Woods on the team, because it's confusing me now. Those are the ones I want to see return. I was not a fan of Elaine Chooley in net.
Okay.
She should have been pulled earlier. She just clearly wasn't having a good night. She did well for us in the regular season, and that's all fine and dandy. But unfortunately, when you're facing an elimination game, if you're not bringing your A game, you are going to bring your B game to the bench.
Exactly. That's just generally the situation. Although, I mean, I don't know. It's hard because it is a shortened season. It was out of whack with the COVID issues, and they're an expansion franchise. I mean, there's a lot against them. Mm-hmm. So I think next season will be a much better indicator of what's, you know, what they are going forward.
I agree, especially if we can get back most of the same roster. However, I would have to see next year's lineup to give a good prediction on how we're going to do.
Now, here's something to talk about coming into the next year. We've caught wind of the fact that they're looking to maybe add a Montreal franchise.
Correct. They were teasing that in the Twitch chat, true. In Twitch chat too. Oh my lord. Which is awesome because, you know, with Montreal being such a huge hub of hockey-loving nuts, I can imagine they'd be treated the exact same way. And just as we saw in Boston, they had all the mascots come out. Toronto would do it too with the Montreal Alouettes, with the Montreal Canadiens. They would have mascots there, I promise you. And they would welcome whatever Montreal would be called. The Montreal Poutines, I don't know.
Now, generally, they only sign one season contracts.
Yes.
And up until this season, there were no Canadian teams. Toronto Six is the first Canadian team. Mm-hmm. But there are quite a few Canadian players on some of the other franchises. I'm wondering, with the addition of, say, the team in Montreal, if that happens, and now you have the Toronto team as well, the temptation, especially in a non-COVID year, we're hoping, mm-hmm. a non-bubble year, the temptation to sign closer to home, it's got to be great for some of these girls.
Oh, 100%. You want to stay close to home. And they want the family around, support them. And who doesn't want to play in front of their friends and family, right? Who doesn't want to score that winning goal with everybody just being like, hey, I'm here kind of deal. I was there when. Because I would love to. And I don't think it's going to stop at Montreal either. I think it's going to go and expand, as we discussed earlier, to probably the other provinces, like Vancouver would probably be the next biggest market they could expand to. And then after that, it'll be Alberta, where they will have most likely Calgary and Edmonton. I get I'm speaking of the future, but Kobe, in 20 years, there will be 4 to 5 Canadian teams. You can bet money on that.
Now, in the short term, though, given the short-term contracts and now the expansion into Canada, I mean, that's gonna majorly change how I think the teams look going forward, and maybe even kind of force some of the franchises into the position that maybe we should sign some of these people for longer, because mm-hmm. you could lose some of your best players if they decide, I want to be closer to home.
Right, and that's when we're going to have, like you mentioned, longer-term contracts. There's going to be more sponsorships. And I'm fairly certain there's going to be more sponsorships coming in the next season. Just, you know, they've tackled another huge market, which is Toronto. And if they expand again, they're going to go into Montreal. Well, now you have BMO is right there. And I mean, BMO has its hands in other sports too, with TFC, with the CFL. So I don't see why they wouldn't want to do some type of partnership with a Montreal-based team. And even like just local things, like, you know, Bob's Burgers, for instance, I'm sure they'll have a hand in something with concessions or whatever it is. So as like with the expansion happening there, you bring in more eyes, you bring in more people, you bring in more sponsorships, you bring in more money, allowing for, this might not be much, but you could have a season and a half to a 2-season contract.
Correct. And I think the fact that they actually had games on NBC, mm-hmm. that's massive. I mean, that's going to really pull some interest in, and from the sponsor side of things and from the fan side of things, you have nationally televised games, and that was in a shortened season, and in an expanded full season, hopefully they can work on that deal with NBC and get a few more games televised.
I would love to see it on ESPN, TSN, Sportsnet. I want to see it everywhere. NBC is a good start, but it's definitely not the mountaintop. They can climb higher.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to join the Pro Sports Podcasters Facebook group, where you will be able to interact with the hosts and talk to other sports fans. Now back to the show.
So we're recording this Sunday morning after UFC 260, and a number of things happened last night in what was a relatively plagued UFC. I mean, there was a lot of COVID issues, fights got canceled, guys got hurt. You had some last-minute stand-ins, but even with all that happening, it ended up being a very entertaining UFC, and there was 3 fights in particular that have real future implications and what's going on, and I'm going to begin with Tyron Woodley versus Vicente Luque.
That was a fun fight to watch.
Yeah, quick fight,
mm.
but definitely fun fight. You talk about action-packed. It's about as action-packed as 4 minutes can be.
Mm-hmm.
In the, you know, opening friggin' stanza of a UFC fight. But a couple of things that are important here. Number one, Vicente Luque is legit. He's on his way up. I've watched a number of his fights now, and he went from being someone I did not know to someone I massively respect, and he'll be getting a shot at the title soon, I believe.
Yeah, he's on his way up, and Woodley's on his way out.
Yeah, so that's the other thing, right? Will Tyron Woodley be a UFC fighter, you know, 1 month from now? To me, it's unlikely, but in order for him to do that, one, he's got to change the narrative about what he's there for, because this is now 4 losses in a row since he was the welterweight champion. And generally, the UFC allows you 3, but because of his past success, they let him go to 4, and it was against an up-and-comer that really he has the experience on, the power on, really. He's a much harder hitter when it comes down to it, but couldn't put it together to get the win. In fact, it was a completely different Tyron Woodley we saw out there. He came out firing from the second the referee said go. And usually Tyron Woodley doesn't do much in the first round except fill you out, play good defense, test your chin if he can, and that's about it. Move on to round 2. In this case, it was come out firing, just throwing bombs. He actually caught Luque a couple of times, rocked him a bit, but by doing so, abandoned his defense and got caught, got rocked, and got tapped. And it was good for me because I bet on Luque to get the finish. And, you know, before the first round is over, he got the finish. So bonus there. But now what happens to Tyron Woodley?
There's many options he can go to. He's 38 years old, so you're right. By the 4th loss, he may be released, and we could know as soon as probably tomorrow or the next day if he's going to be. But there's other leagues he can go to. Bellator is the first one that comes to mind. But you had mentioned off, I don't want to say camera, off mic, off recording, whatever it is. You had mentioned in a private conversation about another league. Tell me about that league, or tell us about it.
The PFL. PFL is an upcoming league. It's one of the newest promotions out there, but I like what they're doing. They're basically using a Grand Prix format where you work your way through your division against the other opponents that are set up in it. And in the end, you have the top two guys fight for the prize, in which case here it's $1 million. And that's big money in MMA. Sure, there are guys that make way more than that, but they're few and far between. We're talking about the superstars in the sport in the UFC. Mm-hmm. The average UFC fighter, I mean, he's making an average wage when it comes right down to it. He's not making much in comparison. So for a fighter like that, having an opportunity to go in and maybe fight to fight, you're not making as much as the average UFC fighter, but being able to put it all out there and potentially get that $1 million bonus at the end, that's absolutely massive. And it's very intriguing to me. And what the PFL started to do is they started to sort of poach or land some marquee names in order to make this next season of Grand Prix matches really appealing to the fans. And someone like a Tyron Woodley, who has that crazy knockout power and the pedigree that he has, I think that'll be a massive ad for them if they could land him.
Oh, I totally agree with that. Especially since it's new, he's a trendsetter. You know, and if he's as dominant as we predict him to be, especially if he's facing up-and-comers, he might be the most paid gatekeeper ever.
That's right. And that's the narrative we were talking about, right? Tyron Woodley's been maintaining for the last year or so that he wants to get back to a title shot and get his welterweight belt back. But that's unrealistic at this point. Four losses in a row. Not only did he lose to some true names in the first little while, but now losing to an up-and-comer, it just doesn't make sense. If he really wants to have a belt, it's got to be in a different promotion.
I agree. But, you know, he's, like you said, he's a strong fighter, and it's cool because we were both also looking at the divisions right now. We were talking about another person who is already signed with PFL, a good old Canadian boy named Rory McDonald, to really kind of take over that division and just essentially be the guy who we love to see in the cage.
Yeah, something I can respect Rory for, and I'm a big Rory McDonald fan just because every fight with him is interesting based on him being in it. Just he's got that psychopathic mentality, right? That I just love to see in the ring. Like, there's something off about that guy. I'm not the only one that thinks so. A lot of people see it too, but he is fun to watch. But where I'll give him full credit is that he understands his place in the MMA world, so to speak. Right? He made his run in the UFC. He had title shots. He didn't get over the hump. He didn't get the belt. And at that point, it wasn't like the UFC released him because he was a very intriguing fighter to watch. He made the choice to move on and find success elsewhere, which he already has.
Mm-hmm. He was in Bellator. He won the title and he defended it twice successfully. So good on him.
Yeah. Now he's going to see if he can get the next big bonus in the PFL. Mm-hmm. And looking at the welterweight roster, he's got to be one of the favorites. 100% he's a favorite. But to add someone like a Tyron Woodley, man, that would just make it that much more intriguing. I know you came across a name in the PFL that people might not know, but they will definitely recognize.
Muhammad Usman. And he is apparently the older brother to the current champion, welterweight champ, Kamaru Usman.
Yeah, so this is the lesser-known Usman, but you see the two of them standing side by side, and you'll be like, man, if he's got half the skill that Kamaru has, then I wouldn't want to be in the PFL. Like, man, he's massive.
He's actually jumped up to heavyweight, apparently. Just a beast.
Yeah, he's huge. He's huge, man.
His first fight is Thursday, May 6th against Sales. I've never seen this fighter before. But man, you know, I'm getting excited for this division, for this league in general.
When it first got developed, I was interested in the format. I liked the idea behind the format, but they didn't quite have a roster yet. You know what I mean? It was a bunch of up-and-comers. And now it's starting to gain a little bit of notoriety and respect. And so now you have recognizable names going over to the PFL, and they're aggressively going after fighters. So if the UFC releases Tyron Woodley, and I think that's likely, it's going to come down to what's more intriguing, or like, what's he after? Is he after the money or is he after the fame? To me, if you're after the fame, you go to the PFL. If you're after the money, you probably go to Bellator.
And do you think that the PFL will be absorbed by Bellator or UFC in the future?
No.
No? Too strong?
Too strong. Too independent. And I don't think that's their goal when it comes right down to it. There have been promotions that have popped up that
their goal is to try and sell to the UFC, right? I don't think that's the PFL's goal. I think their goal is to be a legitimate competition and option for fans outside of the UFC and Bellator.
Right. Now, back to the UFC for a quick second. You had money on a certain fight, the Shane O'Malley fight, right?
Yeah, the Sugar Show.
And how much were you sweating during that fight?
Oh, man. You talk about upsetting. So I bet Shane O'Malley to get the finish.
Right.
And in the first round, it was all Sugar O'Malley. Because of his size, right? He is huge for his division. And I'm not talking about muscle mass. I'm talking about height.
Mm-hmm.
He is as tall as you can pretty much be as a bantamweight.
Yes.
So you're talking about a guy who's 6 foot and like, whatever it is, 135 pounds. So he presents serious matchup problems for the majority of opponents in the bantamweight division. And his ability when it comes to movement, quickness, and kicks, it's very hard to break down for the average fighter. And he was owning the first round. He was using that length, using his kicks to keep distance, and then looking for openings and exploiting them when he could. And he tagged Thomas Almeida bang on with a head kick.
Mm-hmm.
Rocked him. So at that point, you figure, okay, this is the beginning of the end. Then he lands a solid punch to the face and drops him. Figure, that's it. But what happens next is, in O'Malley fashion, he raises his hands and walks away.
Correct.
So instead of pouncing on him, throwing maybe probably would have taken two punches and the referee would have stopped the fight, he walks away with Thomas Almeida kind of sitting on the canvas. He wasn't completely out. He was just rocked.
Mm-hmm.
And the ref says, hey, it's not over. So at that point, Almeida's making his way back up and hand it to him. That guy's got a crazy chin because to come back from that and go another almost full two rounds is ridiculous. Okay, so you got to give him credit for that. But basically, it was the Sugar Show. The entire fight, I was just sweating because it took him to like the last minute of the last round to finally land another solid shot and get the knockout. And the brutal part there was he landed a solid shot and dropped Almeida to the canvas almost flat out.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the referee refused to call it. So he was forced to throw one last shot, and it was one of the most vicious, full gravity coming downward punch to the face that I've seen in the UFC. I think he did that just to make a point to the ref. You probably should have stopped it in the first round when I walked off.
Right.
Then this vicious shot wouldn't have happened, especially if you went ahead and stopped it in the last round when I dropped him the way I did. So he was almost like sending a message to future referees. If you do not stop it when I walk away, I am going to punish the opponent. And if there's permanent damage, it's on you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because he labeled him. Man, it was vicious. It was so vicious, that final punch. Now, good for me. I make money on it. unfortunate for Almeida.
He has health insurance.
Yeah, it was severe, man. It was severe. But that takes us ahead to what's next, Shane O'Malley.
A title shot.
Too early.
Oh, I hope he gets a title shot soon, though.
Too early. But soon, I agree with you. Here's the thing. So to me, his next fight would be against one of the 14th and the 15th ranked guy by UFC rankings. I don't put much stock in UFC rankings. Okay, I don't know who makes them up and I don't know how they arrive at it. Maybe the top three guys make sense. But after that, it's sort of random, in my opinion. But for currently right now, like they got the 14th and 15th ranked guys. The 14th ranked guy is Kyler Phillips. This is a guy who's under 30.
Mm-hmm.
He's on a 4-fight win streak, right? He's an up-and-comer, and so is Shane O'Malley. So that fight makes sense. And then the other fight that makes sense is a guy who's currently ranked 15th, and that's Marlon Vera, and that's the guy who beat Sugar O'Malley the last time out because his ankle snapped. And he keeps maintaining that that wasn't a loss. I had an injury, and that shit happens. But, I mean, the injury happened because Buddy was kicking the living shit out of him in the legs.
Correct.
And went after his legs when he took him down and everything. So that is a win for Vera. But it looked like Sugar O'Malley was the better striker up until the injury.
Mm-hmm.
So that fight makes sense. But I would personally like to see him fight Kyler Phillips first.
Right.
just to kind of drag out the suspense over the Marlon Vera rematch to try and revenge his broken friggin' ankle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the fight that makes sense to me. If he beats Phillips, then gets the fight against Vera and beats Vera, that should put him easily in the top 10. And then you could give him one of the older gatekeepers as justification, and he beats that person, then he gets a title fight, in my opinion. Although the UFC does things like, this guy's got a lot of hype on him, so let's give him a title fight. So it could happen right away. The final fight to talk about.
Oh, I got chills.
The title fight that everyone was waiting for.
Correct.
And that's Stipe Miocic defending against Francis Ngannou.
Here's the thing. As you know, Kobe, I've been working recently a long, long hour shifts, and I get tired very easily. So I was actually, you know, like I said, for the Sugar fight, I saw him knock down Thomas, and I thought, good, this is over. I rolled over, went to bed. I left it on my TV in case something happened, but I was so tired, I didn't see the rest of it. He still won, didn't know it was the third round. And then I watched the highlights of the Francis Ngannou fight. Oh my, there should have been police at that fight. Somebody should have been charged. This fight should have been illegal. I feel like PETA shouldn't got involved. It essentially reminded me of like a bull taking on a pig.
I agree. It looked unfair and unbalanced from the go, from jump, right? And it's funny, like quite often you hear the commentators and they play shit up. Because it's their job to. They're trying to get the fans hyped. They want the people who paid for the pay-per-view to get hyped. They want to make the fight bigger than it actually is. But this is one of the first times I'm listening to what they're saying, and it was right on par with what I was thinking, right? They're like, I got chills looking at these two guys. I'm like, yep, so do I.
I concur.
You see Ngannou stalking around the friggin' octagon, and Stipe kind of bouncing around trying to use his quickness and his movement to be elusive, but the whole time you're just waiting for like the bomb to drop, and they're like almost freaked out. It's almost scary to watch this, and I'm like, yeah, it's like, it is scary. He looks scary, and then the bomb drops and you're like, holy shit. Now, to Stipe's credit, he took some vicious shots and kept going. That fight could have been over in the first 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Somebody else gets tagged with the shots that he, like, especially the punch he got hit with, and they're down and it's over. And Stipe fucking took it. He's got a crazy chin to take bombs like that. But then when push came to shove, holy shit, man. And I'm going to give Ngannou massive credit in that watching him in this fight was like watching a Uber Ngannou. Right? His skills were just so much better. His takedown defense, significantly better. His patience and pacing, significantly better. Francis Ngannou, a year ago, he goes crazy and tries to finish it in the first round. And if he doesn't get the finish, he starts the second round fucking gasping for air.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, he starts the second round. And yeah, he exerted himself in the first round, but he looked fresh. And he just went right back to work doing the exact same thing, stalking around, waiting to wreck you. That is scary. And it, literally every single commentator, myself included, I was texting with buddies who were watching the fight, and we're all, man, he looks scary calm. And that's exactly what it was. He just looked so calm, so sure of himself, like, it's going to happen. I just got to pace myself. And when the moment arrives, I'm going to wreck him. And that's what it was.
Like I said, when I was watching the highlights, at one point I felt bad for Stipe. Now, keep in mind, these two have fought before. So this is essentially the second time they're meeting. So the trilogy, if there is to be one right now, is 1-1. But just the way Francis Ngannou had him wrapped around his clinches, just it literally to me kind of looked like he, I don't want to say toying with him, but like at one point Stipe tried to push him against the fence a bit, and Francis just wasn't having it. He was like, no, not at all. Like, you did this to me last time. You got me on the ground. I'm not making this happen again. And you're right. I got chills. I'm getting chills thinking about it again.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And I look at the rest of the heavyweight division, and I mean, the wild card is John Bones Jones, and he's supposed to be the next fight. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be. The UFC went on record saying that, oh, John Bones Jones is going to fight the winner of Ngannou Miocic. I don't know. Sometimes the UFC will say something expecting one result, and then when the result doesn't happen, they change their mind. So that's not set in stone, but that's what's supposed to be next.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at the rest of the division, and I mean, his only other loss, really, in my opinion, is to Derek Lewis. Okay, he had an early loss in his career before he knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
His only other loss came in the back-to-back losses to Miocic and Lewis. Mm-hmm. So Derek Lewis, who's fought for the title before, makes sense as his next possible opponent, maybe after John Bones Jones, if he beats John Bones Jones.
So Francis Ngannou versus Derek Lewis would quite literally rock my TV screen, even if it was on silent. Like, the power those men would just have against each other, punch for punch, pound for pound, my TV will fall over.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, Derek Lewis has one punch knockout power.
We saw it against Blades. Yeah.
He's got that crazy one punch knockout power.
Oh, my God.
But, man, Ngannou is just so strong. And the Ngannou I saw last night, man, I don't think that one punch power makes a difference in this situation. The Ngannou we saw in 2018 when he took those losses versus the Ngannou we saw last night, especially if he continues to improve with this new team around him. Mm. I don't know if there's anyone in the heavyweight division really that can test this guy right now. And I think John Bones Jones is in for a world of pain when he faces him, if that is the next fight, because John Bones Jones is great. Okay, he's probably a better mixed martial artist than Francis Ngannou when it comes right down to it. But he's had the advantage of being one of the biggest guys in his previous division. Now he steps into a division where he is not going to be one of the biggest guys. He's going to be facing the biggest guy. And he's had some problems against guys who are his size or bigger.
Well, as I was going to say, it might be another Israel Adesanya versus Błachowicz situation. Where it's like, okay, cool, you did well in your division. Congratulations. But now you're going to come up to my division where my walk-around rate is probably what you achieved to get on this scale.
Yeah, what you're hoping to get to, exactly.
Honestly, and now I have 30 to 40 pounds on you. Sure, you might land a good shot on me. And to John Bone Jones' credit, he could do it. But I think it's going to be harder than he thinks it's going to be.